From Altoona to Waynesburg, Pittsburgh to Ephrata, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is being touted as a pro-consumer reform, but a proposal to end interchange fees on Pennsylvania sales taxes would unleash chaos in the credit processing system and ultimately harm consumers. We get details from Jessica Ward of the National Taxpayers Union. Harnessing the power of technology can lead to more efficient and effective access to healthcare. Joe Geiger has Dr. Bob Murray from NextGen Healthcare in this week's Community Benefit Spotlight. And it is time to end burdensome regulations and licensure requirements and place worker freedom above special interests. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains how that can happen on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Jessica Ward from the National Taxpayers Union in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The so-called collar counties outside of Philadelphia were once dominated by Republicans, but for the past 20 years, those four counties, Bucks, Chester, Delaware, and Montgomery, have all slipped into the Democratic column, in some cases, by very large numbers. But for the first time since George W. Bush was in the White House, Bucks County has flipped to Team Red. The latest numbers give Republicans a slim 264 voter registration lead over Democrats. Bucks County is mirroring statewide voter registration trends, which have seen the Democrat lead whittled from over 1 million to less than 400,000 voters over Republicans, who have posted sizable gains in recent years. Meanwhile, there is some dissension in state Democratic ranks. Erin McClellan is the Democratic nominee for state treasurer and will face off against incumbent Republican Stacey Garrity in November. McClellan has taken aim at Governor Josh Shapiro, who is currently receiving national attention as a potential running mate with likely presidential nominee Kamala Harris. McClellan took aim at Shapiro for sweeping sexual harassment in his administration under the rug. She endorsed North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper for the second slot on the still-in-flux Democratic ticket. CNN has posted a ranking of U.S. Senate seats most likely to flip this November, and Pennsylvania has made the top 10. Incumbent U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. is facing what is shaping up to be his most serious challenger to date in Republican nominee David McCormick. CNN notes McCormick has plenty of money to spend, is supported by a well-funded super PAC, and has deep personal pockets. The Senate Leadership Fund recently announced a $24 million spend on McCormick's behalf. A sign the GOP sees the seat as winnable. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. You likely don't know what an interchange fee is, but you pay it every time you use a credit card. Eliminating that fee on the Pennsylvania sales tax portion of purchases might sound like a good idea, but it actually would harm consumers. Jessica Ward is Senior Director of State Affairs at the National Taxpayers Union. She joins us now to explain what the fee is, how it works, and why proposed changes would be harmful. Jessica, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jessica, there is legislation proposed in the Pennsylvania legislature that would have a big impact on interchange fees on Pennsylvania sales taxes. Now, I'm suspecting that this is a highly technical financial transaction that probably most of our listeners are not aware of what interchange fees are. So to start out, please explain to us what it is we're talking about here.
An interchange fee essentially is when a customer uses their credit or debit card to purchase something from a merchant or retailer, and then that merchant sends over the transaction details to their bank, and then their bank essentially sends things with that transaction information through what's called a card network, and the card network forwards all that information of the transaction from the acquiring bank, so essentially the consumer's bank, to make sure that they have adequate funds, that it is actually, in fact, the consumer who's using their credit card and there aren't any issues of fraud. Following that examination, which, of course, all of this takes place in a matter of seconds, then the transaction is approved or denied, and then the completion of sale essentially happens. And there's a fee that is attached for those payment networks conducting that service, not only for the merchant, but for the consumer who is choosing to use their Visa or MasterCard or whatever the payment method might be. The Pennsylvania legislature is actually not concerned about the entire interchange fee on the transaction. They're only concerned about the interchange fee on the sales tax portion of the transaction. And to give you an example of that, if you were to 2.9% of $1, let's say, that's the sales tax, we're talking about fractions of a cent, which sort of makes it amusing when they're billing this as we're looking out for either the retailer or merchant or the consumer. Because really what they're only interested in is looking out for themselves, which is the government. So I hope that helps explain what an interchange fee is. It's a very complicated way of saying it's a fee that a merchant pays, which is built into their business costs to essentially make that transaction complete.
So it sounds to me like this proposed change, Jessica, is the state legislature wanting private businesses, being the banks and the retailers, to basically collect state taxes for nothing.
Correct. And then the complication that is right now, there isn't the digital infrastructure to make this happen because banks and financial institutions, they apply this interchange fee to the transaction amount. We would have to have a bifurcated system in which you are essentially processing two transactions. And, you know, it's interesting because when these proposals, they sound good from a messaging standpoint, but we would be naive to think that if we're asking financial institutions to do this, that it won't increase fees on the back end or that they won't attempt to obtain that revenue elsewhere, because that's a normal thing to do as a business. In addition to my role at the National Taxpayers Union, I own three small businesses. So it always, I always find it upsetting when I see a bill that comes out that's messaged as friendly to small businesses, because it's usually introduced by someone who's never operated or run a small business in their life. And if they did, they would know that there are 10 other things that small businesses are worried about before an interchange fee and the sales tax portion of it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Operating a small business myself, there are a lot of things we're more concerned about than this microscopic fee. But small as the fee is, though, Jessica, to make this change, it sounds like what you've described is the whole fee system is very intricate, very carefully balanced. To make this change, would it throw a monkey wrench into the entire process?
It would. It would create a huge disruption in that financial ecosystem, to include probably affecting perks that we all get when we use our credit cards. You know, those miles that you get when you fly for the airlines, those aren't going to be offered anymore because they're going to alter their policies and these fees are going to pop up elsewhere. Right now, there's a lot of transparency in these fees. You know, MasterCard, the likes of MasterCard, Visa, they're saying, hey, in order to make this a safe and secure process, this is the fee that we charge, and then merchants build it into their business model and their pricing structures. If that's not happening anymore, I think we kind of forget how much credit card companies are out there protecting us, protecting our information, fraud, et cetera. They spend a lot of money in AI innovation to make sure that yours or I's identity isn't, you know, taken from, unfortunately, nefarious people out seeking our information. But yeah, it's the compliance costs alone to make this happen are going to be passed on to small businesses, because, you know, a larger business or a big box store, they have more, I guess, people in their ecosystem to negotiate this stuff with credit card companies. Small businesses don't. I mean, you mentioned you own a small business and I am three, and it's your time to negotiate with some of these larger companies should more fees come down because a bill like this passes in the Pennsylvania legislature. You know, we just don't have that capacity that larger businesses do. And those fees are going to be harmful when they come down the small business pipeline.
We are talking with Jessica Ward, Senior Director of State Affairs at the National Taxpayer Union, about a proposed change to interchange fees on Pennsylvania sales tax collections. And Jessica, we in Pennsylvania, of course, proudly proclaim that we are the Keystone State, but we aren't the only state. So a change like this, these financial networks are national, actually international in scope. Is it even possible for Pennsylvania to change its law and have it practically go into effect?
No, I don't believe so, because again, the financial digital payment processing infrastructure does not exist to essentially separate these transactions. And I'll make note of this. These bills have been introduced for many, many years, none of them passing with the exception of Illinois. And I don't know that we should be following Illinois in doing anything given their financial status. But it's a little bit amusing that lawmakers, in attempts to say they're looking out for small businesses and the consumer, by passing some legislation like this. If they were serious about that, we'd be having discussions about reducing the sales tax instead of reducing the interchange fees on the sales tax. That isn't government overreach and just the silliness sometimes that government engages in. I don't know what is.
Well, the legislature here had the opportunity to, Jessica, pass a reduction in the personal income tax. And in Pennsylvania, many, if not most, small businesses pay their taxes at the personal income tax rate. That change did not happen. So now they're proposing sort of this indirect change. At the end, are we consumers not going to end up having to pay for all the technology that will have to change and all the process changes that would have to be made?
We'll absolutely be paying for it. And unfortunately, it won't be as transparent as it is now. You know, these companies assign a percentage to the cost when a consumer purchases something from a merchant. And you know what that is. And as a small business owner, you can negotiate also credit card processing fees. These fees are going to turn up in a far less transparent manner. And the consumer will be paying for it without a doubt. And so will the merchants. And on that note, we talk about Pennsylvania still having a gross receipts tax and then some of the unemployment stuff that's happening in Pennsylvania that lawmakers could tackle that would be beneficial for small businesses. You know, at NTU, we did a rundown of states and unemployment insurance, and Pennsylvania has, generally speaking, a low unemployment rate, but they have a high claimant rate. Well, that affects the insurance rate that small businesses are paying. And it's like there are all of these ideas and all of these things that could actually help small businesses and the consumer alike. And Pennsylvania is not doing them. Instead, they're worried about passing a bill like this that would essentially hide fees from consumers and merchants and increase costs across the board.
I know you focus on state legislative issues, but has there been any federal legislation introduced that would attempt to accomplish something similar?
There has. It has, fingers crossed, not been successful thus far. We have unfortunately seen an uptick in interchange fees not only being introduced, but state legislatures tend to get creative by introducing what's called a study bill over the summer, you know, when no one's particularly paying attention. And generally, when a study bill is introduced over the summer, we see it introduced in the upcoming session. They're sort of giving floating a trial balloon out there. NTU, we're going to be busy here combating this misguided legislation.
Well, the National Taxpayers Union has for many decades been looking out for we, the taxpayer. So, Jessica, tell us a little bit more about the National Taxpayer Union. Also, where can folks find you on the web?
So you can find us at ntu.org. And essentially what the National Taxpayers Union is we are an advocate for the taxpayer.
Jessica Ward, Senior Director of State Affairs at the National Taxpayers Union. Jessica, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Technology properly deployed and utilized can improve the efficiency of healthcare delivery. To learn more, Joe Geiger has Dr. Bob Murray of NextGen Healthcare in the Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Lohman, and thank you, Dr. Murray, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Dr. Murray, the topic is how do we use technology to better manage our health care? What do we need to know about that?
Well, Joe, I think there's a lot to unravel there, but a lot of Americans spend a lot of time actually trying to manage their care. They estimate an average of about 8 hours a month managing the care for themselves and for their loved ones. And so I think kind of my message today would be ways that people can use technology to make better use of that time and make sure that they're able to communicate with their physician or their provider as efficiently as possible to get the kind of health care that they need and the kind of outcomes from it that they want.
Speaking to a couple of people that I know about this interview coming up, and one of the things they said when it comes to technology, we were told a bill of goods a number of years ago that we're going to have records available all throughout the healthcare systems to make it easy to pass information on. But if you go to the same system in the period of a week, they ask the same five questions that's already in their systems, and they just wonder, well, what happened to the technology? What happened to the thought that if I tell you what my meds are today, why do we need to go through that again on Tuesday or Friday?
It's a good question. It's a common statement that people say. I do think that we're not where we want to be necessarily in terms of having that record that really is traveling around with you from doctor to doctor. But it is important. You know, I am a practicing physician and realize that sometimes they're asking you the questions because it's not impossible for the medicines to change between Friday and Tuesday. And it's very important that we know what your allergies are,
sure,
what your medications are, the reason that you're there. So that may be some of the repetition, but I can certainly see it being frustrating that everything is just not in the computer. And you already asked me that. That's a common feeling.
It says in some of the material you provided me that Americans spend an average of 8 hours a month managing health care for themselves and their loved ones. How is that possible?
A lot of time is kind of wasted, and that's what I'm here to kind of get people to realize and realize that they can maybe make some different choices or be maybe even a little bit more demanding from their doctor's office around, are they using technology that's working to help them communicate? I mean, the way I like people to think about it is that we want, as physicians, we want medicine to kind of be as convenient and as effective as online shopping. And what I mean by that is that we want the technology that's in the office and the technology that our patients can communicate with us. We want it to be immediate, to be convenient, to be transparent, that people really feel like they can ask questions and get answers, and that they can take advantage of that technology to make those 8 hours a month more efficient and not have them be a waste of time. Not all doctors' offices are there, for sure, but I do think that people can stop kind of throwing up their hands and saying that the technology is not working or that it just is the way it is, because some doctors' offices are there and some patients have an experience where they message the practice and they get an answer back within a few hours, or they're able to have a virtual appointment online, you know, a video visit. They can schedule their appointments online. If they need access to their lab results or their records, they're able to get those online, and they don't have to spend, you know, those 8 hours on the phone on hold with the practice's staff. Instead, they're able to have a more effective conversation with their doctor. So kind of the online shopping version of medicine, so to speak.
So to the detriment of what we're discussing right now, the statistics show that more than 100 million people across the country don't even have a primary care provider. That certainly doesn't count the influx of immigration over the last several years. Boy, and it's an average wait of 26 days in many big cities to secure an appointment with a new doctor. And that's before we get into just managing what probably is a relatively healthy relationship between a doctor and patient.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty astounding, right, that 100 million Americans don't have a primary care doctor. And sometimes there's real access issues in some areas of the country, some cities and some rural areas. There are not enough doctors to go around or healthcare providers, you know, nurse practitioners, physicians, assistants. But sometimes it's also just the hassle factor, mm-hmm. right? If you call the office and you can't speak with them, and when you leave a message, they call you back 2 days later and offer you an appointment 3 months from now. That's not necessarily an access issue. That's just an office that's not as effective at communication. They're not using some of this technology to improve the relationship. The best practices, the most convenient practices, they have their appointment book online. You can say what kind of appointment you want if you're a new patient or an established patient, and you can book that appointment. And if you've already been there a couple times, a lot of times that can even be a video visit. You could do it without even needing to travel to the doctor's office.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Dr. Bob Murray of Next Gen Healthcare. It says here that you're in charge of things over there.
I don't know if I go that far, but I am Chief Medical Officer for Next Gen Healthcare, and we provide technology and services to doctors' offices all throughout the United States. And so we provide some of the computer records, some of this technology to enhance the communication between the office and patients, as well as, you know, stuff like billing and other kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff for doctors' offices. And well, so we do try to get the practices that use our software to kind of take full advantage of it. But I think patients should be on the lookout for the practices that seem to be doing that, whether they're using our software or not.
Well, you're a nationally respected physician and health tech leader, and you've been featured on television programs. You've been at many industry events. Let's quickly get into what are some of the strategies a patient can use to save on some of that wasted time?
It probably starts in terms of just finding a doctor. I think a lot of people use word of mouth to find a doctor, you know, ask their friends and family, which is perfectly fine. But I would then encourage them, go ahead and go to that practice's website and just get a feel for it. Does it look like people can make online appointments? Does it look like there's a way to message the practice or to set up a video visit, you know, once you're a patient? Mm. Do they advertise, or do they make it very easy to get to the practice's portal, right? And then when you do have an appointment, you're only going to have a few minutes with the doctor. So you want that appointment to try to be efficient. And so as you're seeing the doctor, were you able to answer some of those questions that you get asked so many times? Were you able to answer those with the computer or with your phone before the visit, so you don't have to waste time when you're with the doctor doing that? And, you know, I want you to kind of realize, as you're spending your, whatever, 8 minutes, 15 minutes with the doctor, however long you have, how much of this could we have covered before the visit, right? If things were a little bit more efficient, right? And so that you could really make the maximum use of that very short time with the doctor. But I think while you're there, does the practice kind of promote the portal? Do they try to enroll you in it? Do they tell you how you can communicate with them after hours? Are they just interested in not wasting your time and to really making sure that you know how to communicate with them or not? And then afterwards, I would always ask the provider, hey, can I send you a message if I have questions? And then if you do, which a lot of people do, go ahead and send a message and see what happens. Are they able to get back to you? And I think you can get a sense from that kind of cycle how communicative, how receptive that practice is going to be for you, and then the decision to make if you stay with them or not.
Dr. Murray, we've got another patient sitting in our outer office here, so we're going to have to cut this interview off. This is Joe Geiger speaking with Dr. Robert Bob Murray, who's the Chief Medical Officer at Next Gen Healthcare. If people want to know more about you or what we're talking about, how can they find you?
They can just go to nextgen.com, NextGen.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much for your time. Back to you, Loman.
Burdensome regulations and licensure requirements designed to stifle competition must be reduced or eliminated to enable more workers to succeed in the gig economy. So says Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
The growing economic devastation caused by this Biden-Harris administration has left millions of Americans wondering how they'll make ends meet. Forget trade-offs on vacations or luxury items. In this economy, families are trading off whether they can put food on their table or gas in their car to go to work. As a result, they're turning to the gig economy to offset the impact of Bidenomics. We see this in the numbers. Pew Research reports that 56% of the millions of gig workers across the country do this type of work to earn extra money. This past week, the nation watched the RNC appearing rather unified as they took to the stage in Milwaukee to pitch their ideas to the American public. Much of what was presented were standard conservative ideals: lower taxes, stronger border protections, and less red tape. These are ideas that have remained true to their platform for multiple generations. However, one speaker and one topic threw many for a loop in both parties: the Teamsters President's address to the Republican delegates across the country. It was shocking, to say the least, to see the president of a union on stage at the Republican National Convention, given their 121-year history of support for far-left-of-center ideals. This came as a surprise to many and signals the growing threat of job-crushing policies that hurt Pennsylvania workers attempting to make enough money to put food on their kitchen tables. Millions of Americans want to work hard to create their American dream with their own hands. Entrepreneurial and hardworking people built our country's success. They created value, and they did not wait for a bureaucrat to give them permission to do so. Regrettably, many union leaders and those who serve them in Washington and Harrisburg don't think the same. On average, American workers face over 170 licenses and regulations restricting where and how they can work, a frustrating reality that hampers progress. Uber drivers, construction workers, freelancers, and countless independent workers must deal with a mountain of legal barriers that slow them and America down. Labor reform, as opposed to growing union interference, is needed to let people chase their dreams without all the red tape. When people choose how they work, they can match their careers to their values and goals. This freedom helps create a balanced life filled with purpose and fulfillment. By cutting out unnecessary rules and regulations, we can help Americans innovate and thrive, giving everyone a shot at reaching their full potential. Instead of bringing in tried and failed ideas, there are many ways Washington can protect worker freedom. Congress can pass the Employee Rights Act. This bill would eliminate many of the barriers that keep Americans from working the jobs they want and protect small businesses from labor regulations that would make them less competitive. Lastly, Congress can embrace more legal pathways for independent contractors and allow them to receive benefits from clients, pick their own healthcare savings accounts, and eliminate unnecessary tests that unfairly keep Americans away from independent work. History shows that when freedom thrives, prosperity follows suit. Let's give Pennsylvanians the autonomy and liberty to have full control over their careers. Our country will be much better because of it, and not put them back under control of those who seek equal outcome rather than equal opportunity. Conservative leaders must reject the ideals of President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and progressive governors like Michigan's Gretchen Whitmer, who continue to deprioritize worker freedom over special interests. Prosperity is possible, and we can provide prosperity through removing burdensome regulations that hold workers back. Join our movement for more at prosperityispossible.com and help us protect the right to independent contracting and gig work. Sign your name to our movement and help us steer Washington and Harrisburg in the direction of freedom as opposed to control and constraint. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRAK-AM in Williamsport, WROV-FM in Ridgeway, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.